Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Oh boy, Carl, I'm about to get in the doghouse if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
This is just something that dads do. I think they set up pranks for their wife with their kids, and I think I'm about to get put in the doghouse, but it's kind of hilarious. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox. Happy Christmas Eve to you. I can't believe it's Christmas Eve already. Went upstairs and I told my son, you're so incredibly spoiled. I hope you realize that. My wife made a pineapple upside down cake for the family that's coming over today. We have family from Ohio driving up. They're going to stay with us for Christmas.
Yours or hers?
Her side of the family. And my wife said, now, Ryan, don't you touch that pineapple upside down cake. She was very stern. And I said, what if in the morning it goes really good with coffee? Please let me just get a little slice. No one will know. And she's like, don't you dare touch it. My family is coming over. You are going to leave it. So my son is the first to wake up this morning, and he's upstairs. And I was, you know, in between the news breaks, get another cup of coffee. And I say, here, this is what we're going to do, son. Here's how we're going to play it. When mom wakes up and she comes out here, I want you to say, hey, can I have a slice of pineapple upside down cake? And she'll say, no, that's for family later. Then I want you to say, then why did you let dad have a slice? And she's going to be so mad at me when she thinks I took a slice. Now, I didn't in reality take a slice, but I'm just for that brief 30 seconds it takes for her to confirm if I screwed up or not, she's going to be so mad at me. And then after the fact, she's going to say, why did I marry you? And me as a husband, a loving husband, understand that there's certain roles in a family that you must partake in. If there's someone that's jiggling the door handles at night or someone going around that's suspicious, it's your duty as a husband to figure out what that is and protect the family, right? If there's a spider in the house, you smash that spider. That's your duty as a husband. And the third duty is always play little meaningless pranks on your wife because that's how you keep the romance alive. Let's play the shortlist this morning.
The Mark Cox shortlist.
You had other members of the media manning the ramparts, attacking their fellow reporters, saying that they were outraged that they would even dare raise such questions.
Why would they ever dare question the Biden administration? Because it sounds like he wants to be sainted after he gets out of office, like the Catholic Church and the Pope are going to say, Saint Joe Biden never did anything wrong. That's what they're trying to set up right now. And it's kind of sad.
Donald Trump is humanly incapable of shame. And every Republican has learned from Trump. And what they've learned, Eamon, is never apologize.
All right. That's one way to look at it. And that is the opinion of Joe Walsh. We're going to talk about that. He likes to, his main point was that he believes people that support Donald Trump like the fact that he's, quote unquote, a terrible human being. So we'll talk about that.
I hear Democrats criticizing the idea that we have unelected people with too much influence over the government. I invite them to pick up the Wall Street Journal from this week and find out that unelected people have been running the government for the last 4 years.
How many believe that Joe Biden has been acting on his own, meaning that he has been under his own influence and he is definitely not mentally compromised and he is definitely running the show? How many people believe that?
Mr. Mayor, come here. Come on, get up here. Sit in my lap.
Come on. Oh, man, sit in my lap. Blech. That was Joe Biden inviting a child from the audience to come up on stage and sit on his lap. What a creeper, man. No, thank you. How would you handle that? So if you were, let's say, lucky enough to meet the president of the United States, and I think a lot of us would understand there's respect for the office, and you're given the opportunity to meet the president, you would take that opportunity. That would be, you know, an honor to meet the president of the United States. Let's say you were there with your kids, and the president of the United States, that's known for sniffing the hair of children, asks, hey, little kid, come sit on my lap. You're grabbing your kid and you're like, this ain't happening, right? I always wondered, like, if you were to be next to Joe Biden and he like tried to force your kid to do something you don't want your kid to do, and you like grabbed your kid forcefully away from the president, if Secret Service would tackle you for that. I always wondered, and I think it might be worth it to protect your child to get a tackle from Secret Service and who knows what else after. All right, so I wanted to talk about this, and there's this one opinion piece in Axios, media's suck-up moment, and the idea is that you're finding a lot of these different companies now coming around to Donald Trump and saying, you know what, maybe we're going to be nice to you all of a sudden. Like Time Magazine, for example, putting him as person of the year after making him the devil. You know, keep in mind, a lot of these same people were looking at him as if he were literally Hitler, literally Hitler. I mean, we're not saying this as in a teenage girl, like literally, like so literally. No, we're talking about they actually believe this garbage. And now you're finding them writing checks to him to suck up to him. Let's see. A week after Trump's victory, two executives from Televisa Univision, the parent company of the largest U.S.-based Spanish language broadcaster, flew to Mar-a-Lago so the president-elect could personally thank them for election support. L.A. Times owner vowing to balance out his editorial board with more conservative voices. Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos said that earlier this month he was actually very optimistic about Trump's second term. And then it goes on and on and on. And some of these companies are going there, you know, Facebook being another one, Mark Zuckerberg going in. All these companies are sucking up to him now. What's up with that? Where did that come from? What happened the last 4 years when it came to Joe Biden and when it came to these press briefings? Number one, very little information was given during these press briefings, but the journalists that were inside there, with the exception of just a few of them, didn't really question anything that was going on. They went in single file line behind Joe Biden, as if to say, whatever he says is the gospel truth. So we're going to believe this administration blindly and never question him. Very few journalists, and the ones that did, you have to give major respect to, because they did not have a dereliction of their duty as a journalist. They actually asked tough questions, even though they knew they wouldn't get an answer from the White House. There was this one clip. Let me see what clip that is. This is Senator Cotton on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Can we play clip number three?
It's not just that they didn't do their job. They were actively complicit in the cover-up. If you recall, Hugh, back in the summer, the Wall Street Journal tried to run a version of the story it ran a few days ago about how badly Joe Biden had declined. And what happened? You had other members of the media manning the ramparts, attacking their fellow reporters, saying they were outraged. They would even dare raise such questions. That's just carrying water for Democrats like Chuck Schumer, who just a few months before the debate in June said that Joe Biden's mental acuity was great, hadn't lost a step in years, not a step. So the members of the media who have covered Joe Biden for 4 years didn't just fail to do their job. They were complicit. They acted in concert with Joe Biden's high command to make sure that no one else could ask those questions as well. So I've got no time for them. And if Donald Trump wants to evict every single one of them from the White House press room, more power to him.
Evict every single one of them from the press briefing room. Okay. Keep in mind that Donald Trump, during his time as president and even the time after, would call out the dishonest media, fake news. He would point out over and over again the instances where, number one, he wasn't treated fairly, but number two, they would flat out lie about him. How many times did he call them out? And then after the fact, we realized that Donald Trump was right about those things. It happened, I don't know, close to every time. an awful lot. I mean, what's the batting average? Let's say if this were baseball, he would be the all-time leader in batting average if it came to the amount of times he was right when calling out the media. And after the fact, they don't go back. They don't care to correct the record. They just go on and then they find the next smear to move on to. And then the cycle continues. So why would Donald Trump, number one, trust them, but number two, allow them back in the press briefing? I'll tell you why. Because he can handle that. He can handle the dishonesty, the lies. He can call it out. It's something that I don't think any other politician that I've seen, at least in my lifetime, would ever be able to handle the same amount of pressure that he has. So I don't think there is a need to do it. I think there is a need to call out the lies as opposed to hide from them. All right, I'm Ryan Recker filling in. And I got to tell you, I'm a little bit scared now to go to these big drone shows after this story out of Florida. We'll get to that coming up. You can find me online at Ryan Recker. Don't go anywhere. Filling in for the Mark Cox Morning Show on 97.1 FM Talk. So nice. You know, one of my favorite Christmas songs, too, and I mentioned I like that one song by the Kinks, but the other one is the Charlie Brown Christmas theme. I always like that one, too.
It's called Linus and Lucy. I'll play that next.
You do know that one. Okay.
Yeah.
How do you know the title of that?
It's my job. It's what I do.
It's your job to know the Charlie Brown Christmas titles?
Yes. So when someone like you says, hey, at the hockey game, can you play that one song by that one guy?
Yeah.
I can go, oh, you mean Linus and Lucy by Vince Guaraldi? Speaking of the,
you're kind of a celebrity in that sense. So, Carl, let me ask you this. Were you in the latest NHL game that came out again?
My horn blowing was, yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. They need to get a 3D version of you up in the booth doing that.
So, yes, they have us for the, I guess it's EA Sports. Every year they do a new version of NHL 2K24, and they have us blow the horn. So it's the actual horn blowing and goal sequence of every NHL team.
So how do they mic that? Do they go to center ice and record it, or how do they get the mic?
They actually have us record it. I think they have our buddy Ryan Schulte, who was used to be our chief engineer here. He is the engineer for the radio broadcast, which you can hear on the St. Louis Blues app and nowhere else. And then he records that. Basically, he sticks a mic over the side and records it.
That's something else. He does it from the booth.
Yeah.
Without blowing out the
microphone. Well, we have to make sure that there's no one else in the building.
Uh-huh.
Because you don't want the ambient crowd noise, or you don't want somebody going, what are you doing?
Who's playing with the thingy up there? They're like upset. They think someone broke into the booth. So that is your job. You're paid to do that?
I am.
Go press the button?
It is very nerve-wracking. That's why I have some gray hairs now.
Are you concerned you're going to blow the horn when it's unnecessary?
See, here's the thing. Every time we talk about that, then I get really paranoid, and sometimes it happens. But it hasn't happened in a while, so I hate talking about it because then you have the self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah.
I think everyone in their own profession has that sort of problem. Since I read news now, basically, I do news here in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I'm doing a live newscast, I'm reading script blindly. I mean, it's put in front of me, and I'm reading it
that
Ron Burgundy style.
You did not write yourself.
No. Very few. I mean, there's producers, there's other anchors, things. They all kind of contribute, and it all goes into a giant bucket of news. And then the producers stack the news in a way where they think, you know, here's what the top story is down the line. So eventually you'll run into a story that you wrote, but, you know, you don't know when it's coming up, but you're mostly reading what other people wrote. So I'll be reading things blindly for the first time, and then a name will come up, and I'm terrible at pronouncing names. So a name will come up, and if there's no pronouncer, my brain freezes. And I'll think to myself, this is my mental. Like I can see it coming up, and while my mouth is saying the words that are on the screen, my brain is thinking, how do I pronounce this word that's up there? And then when I get down to it, I've psyched myself up so much in my brain that it doesn't matter what it says. I'm going to say what's wrong. I've trained myself to I should tell my brain to bypass itself and just let it come out. But instead, I psych myself up. I'm guessing it's similar what goes on in your brain when you get nervous about the horn.
Yes, usually it's the second period that is my downfall.
second period is where the most mistakes happen?
Yes, okay. Because in the first and third periods, I have a direct eye view at the goal. In the second period, I am farther away and I have to use a monitor.
I got you. So you're waiting to see if the puck crossed the line.
Well, actually, I'm supposed to wait until three things happen. The light comes on. Two, the most important one is if the ref points. The guys with the orange armband have to point to signify a goal. That is the thing that is the most important.
Gotcha. And number three, don't mess it up. That's the three things.
Well, no. The third one is the puck has to cross the line.
Right. So you have to confirm that yourself? The lineman or the ref pointing's not enough?
The ref pointing is the most important.
Yeah. Got it.
But three things happen before I blow the horn.
Got it.
Usually.
Quick story out of Orlando, Florida. This is actually a really scary story. I've seen videos of these drone shows, but I've never witnessed one myself. And Orlando Fire Department confirmed a person, we're talking a 7-year-old boy, a child, was taken to the hospital after there was an accident at one of these drone shows. This is Fox 35 down there. Kid taken to the hospital.
Our buddy John Brown works there.
Yes, we should have called him. What ended up happening during this holiday drone show on Saturday is that one of the drones fell, knocked the kid out upon impact. Now, these drones aren't these little dinky things you buy at Amazon when they're doing these large shows. They're synchronized. They're a pretty big deal, and they're big, and they're powerful. When you talk about these rotors that are flinging around, which you'll find out, it comes down, it hits the kid, crashes into him, and the kid is injured, goes to the hospital. Now, keep in mind, these rotors are spinning so fast, he has to have open-heart surgery to repair the damage to his chest that the drone did, knocking him down. How scary is that? This 7-year-old. It's not clear why the drone malfunctioned, but I didn't realize that you were close enough. Like, I thought it was in the distance up in the sky. If they were to fall straight down, I thought there would be some clearance or whatever. But man, it hit these spectators. That's a new fear unlocked. That's like a modern day, what's that movie where all these bad things happen to people for accidents? It was like that horror movie.
Final Destination?
This is a Final Destination. See, you're paid to know these things, Carl. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in on 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in. Here we go. This is the Charlie Brown song, which I always love. I can just see the snowflakes in the background.
It's called Linus and Lucy.
I was thinking of the other song, though, in my mind.
Okay.
It's like the kids are singing and they're like high-pitched.
Christmas time is here.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That's the other one.
Yes. We can play that later.
There's no wrong occasion to play the Charlie Brown song, honestly.
That's true.
This is fantastic. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Cox. Merry Christmas to you. It's Christmas Eve. One more day until your kids get to see how spoiled they are. Joining us now is a political commentator, is Connor Vasil. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on 97.1 FM Talk.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So we learned of some of the sentences that President Biden would be commuting. 37 of 40 inmates on federal death row. I would say most, if not all, very questionable. I look at a story like that and think to myself, well, they were looked at by a jury of their peers. They were found guilty. They determined that the maximum sentence, which is the death penalty, is warranted because their crimes were so heinous. And then you have the president of the United States saying, I think we're going to reverse that. It's a lot of people upset, considering there are still victims of these crimes and family members who now look at this and say, you know, what justice is served if this most heinous crime wasn't, followed through to the way the courts deemed appropriate. So what's your thoughts on this commuting of sentences?
Well, Ryan, I think it's important to note that when we look at this, we have to take in mind that this isn't Biden making these decisions, right? It's just his administration, it's just his staff, it's the people who are basically in this last month or so telling him what to do. But that being said, this is still a huge disappointment, especially for the families of those victims. I mean, he says that he cannot stand by in good conscience and watch as the next administration comes in and start considering the original penalties. So he took this stance in order to basically resist any, you know, movement that's going to happen in the next administration. But that being said, it isn't even consistent when it comes to his position. He wants to do a moratorium, right, on death penalties. Then in his presidential power, why didn't he commute all of them, you know, based off of principle? But at the end of the day, this isn't about principle. This is just about saying, look, I'm going to do whatever I can in these last moments because I can.
That's a fantastic point. If it was about the principle of it, then there wouldn't be any left on death row. But there are still the 40, and I guess that number is, you know, I don't know what I would guess the number. If someone were to come up to me and say, guess how many inmates are on death row, federal death row, in, I don't know if I would have guessed 40. I probably would have guessed higher number than that. But you're looking at this and saying, this probably isn't even Joe Biden to begin with. This is special interest that may have influenced him to do this, or maybe have greased the wheels a little bit to do this.
Definitely. I mean, we saw in just in the past 2 years, let alone four, that this man isn't driving the bus, so to speak, right? You have handlers, you have lobbyists, you have staffers, you have all these other people doing this. This is just, it, from his point of view, just a PR stunt, I would say. And this actually highlights, in my opinion, a greater problem we're seeing with politicians and the Democrat Party at large, where they would put special interests, they would put their own political preferences over the health, well-being, and safety of American citizens. I mean, he says in this very two-dimensional, very short message, oh, I condemn these murderers, I grieve for the victims of these acts. Like, well, you basically commuted sentences for people who killed children, who kidnapped, who violated, who assaulted innocents. And you're just going about and saying, well, we are not going to let the rule of law stand. We're just going to commute them because I simply can.
Do you find it contradictory, too? Because he comes out there and I think people point out that he is a devout Catholic. But he also doesn't stand for right to life. So do you find some contradictory messaging when it comes to his morals in that standpoint?
Well, I'll definitely take with a grain of salt anything a politician says, especially when it comes to religion. You know, they can say they're all different kinds of things, but I'll just look at their actions. So this man is, in my opinion, far from any sort of devout believer.
Yeah. When you're, let's say, a Joe Biden and you're in the office and you think about the type of legacy that may be left behind, you think that maybe that was part of what he was thinking about? He's like, well, you know, I got nothing left at this point. I've given everything in service to this country. So why not be considered as the compassionate one? Like he's, for example, you know, wanting to get into good favors with the Pope. So do you think this is his what he may look at as his Hail Mary into his faith?
Well, I think in Joe Biden's mind, he thinks he's done everything right and perfectly since day one when he started politics over 50 years ago. So I think in his mind, he thinks he's the angel, right? But for people who still live on planet Earth, this is definitely a way, I think, his administration at large is to just, you know, tie it up with a bow. But that being said, we're just seeing what they've been doing for the past 4 years, 8 years, et cetera, depending on whatever position they're keeping. They are putting American citizens last. I mean, he would rather commute these death sentences than provide more aid to all the states that suffered hurricane damage, places which are still suffering. But no, we're not talking about that anymore, right?
Yeah. Political commentator Connor Vasile. By the way, if people wanted to look you up online, where can they go?
Thanks, sir. You can look me up online on Twitter, X, at Connor_Vasile. That's V as in Victor. You can also find my books on Amazon, The State Knows Best, and I'm Joe Biden.
You have a book called I'm Joe Biden?
Yes. <That's> It's great. Wonderful. We love them.
I love it. All right. So here's some other questions. And I'll say this out of, I didn't research this ahead of time, and I probably should have. He's been missing in action. Where is he signing these anyway? Mm-hmm. And do we know he's the one signing them, these actions?
Well, as far as his press secretary is saying, he is. So I see no reason why not to believe her, right? They're very transparent individuals. Sarcasm aside.
Why would they lie to us?
Exactly. They have our good intentions in mind, right? But yeah, he's probably, you know, vacationing. Maybe it's too cold now for a beach, but he's somewhere, you know, he's relaxing. He's probably signing them at his home in Delaware. But yeah, this is it. You know, it's they're on their last legs. They're trying to salvage as much as they can before Trump comes into power next month. But at this point in time, you know, the media is still on their side. You might have some outrage, you know, from regular Americans and people like us commentating on this. But at the end of the day, unfortunately, if we do not have a culture shift and people actually starting to respect the rule of law, unfortunately, this thing will keep going and will be unquestioned by the vast majority of people. But hopefully that will change.
Can I just give you totally unfounded conspiracy thoughts for a moment, and you can tell me how far off I am? I believe that the press secretary said before Biden leaves office, he's going to take a trip to Italy with his family. That's where, you know, the Pope is. Again, I go back. I think he's trying to make amends, not necessarily last rites, but I think he is like, I've done some bad things in my life. I think he's like almost saying he's trying to get in good favor with the Catholic Church, as if that's going to help him get into heaven. I feel like he's in that stand in his life right now, and he's doing everything he can because he's afraid he didn't do enough when he was alive. I feel like this is the last stand for a man that's afraid where he's going in the afterlife.
Hey, that's a potential outcome. You know, at this point in time, we really have no clue what the man is thinking. I don't think he knows what he's thinking half the time, but, you know,
no.
He's to each their own, right?
Yeah. So let's say you were one of these family members who had a loved one or a child that was victimized by one of these people that now get to live the rest of their life. I'll tell you what I would be afraid of. I would be afraid of, well, if they're going to commute his death penalty, this person, then who's to say they're not going to review the parole laws and this person's going to be out on the street? Because that's the type of radical thinking that these type of people have, that it's inhumane to allow them to stay in prison for the rest of their life. So we should let them out. I that's what I would be afraid would be happening. The person that did something terrible to me and my family would be getting out on the street sometime in the future. Is that unfounded?
No, that's exactly right, Ryan. We actually see this, you know, it goes back much further back than just this, but around 2015, 2016, you know, when the social justice movement started ramping up its wheels a little bit more and becoming more popular in the social consciousness, people like organizations like BLM and the sort, you're seeing a lot of criminal justice reform, as they like to call it. And I mentioned this, I studied this in my book, The State Knows Best, where basically you have the bureaucratization of law enforcement and the rule of law, where people have been utterly victimized, right? Like these families of these murderers who brutally harmed and murdered their family members and loved ones. They're just put on the wayside. They're completely ignored by not only politicians, but the law itself. So if I were one of these family members, I would be not only completely devastated, but I would feel just absolutely hopeless that despite going through a trial, despite convicting, finding these individuals guilty and being sentenced, to just have at a flick of a wrist and a wave of a pen, just, oh, we're going to absolve you of all that, is completely just unspeakable, in my opinion. So I think Americans need to start waking up and realizing that the government is not here to protect you and to look after you. Okay. Mm-hmm. The government is here just to enforce the laws. That's it.
Yeah.
They cannot protect you in the moment if a crime happens or if you're in harm. So we have to protect ourselves. We need to be resilient and remember that we are the only ones that can truly protect ourselves, not some government.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those realizations, and it's really hard to put yourself into one of these parents' shoes when your kid was the victim of a heinous crime and you believe that justice was served. It's Christmas morning and you left that kid's room untouched and you're thinking about the presents you wanted to get that kid that's no longer here. And then right before Christmas, the president of the United States says, I'm going to side with the person that killed your child. I just cannot imagine it. One more time, if people wanted to find you online, Connor, where can they go?
You can find me online on Twitter. That's at Connor_Vasile, V as in Victor. You can also find my books on Amazon.
Perfect. Political commentator Connor Basile, thank you so much for joining us in St. Louis this morning, and Merry Christmas to you.
Thanks, sir. Merry Christmas.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in on 97.1 FM Talk.
What's happening?
Go, you know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In other news.
We're going to do in other news, Christmas edition. So that song there, Mariah Carey's 1994 hit, All I Want for Christmas Is You, is just a juggernaut. That thing has been around for 3 decades now. It is a phenomenon and a massive financial success. Upon release, Carey earned $60 million in royalties, and now it generates her about $2.5 to $3 million annually.
And I saw her on Black Friday. She was at Enterprise Center doing her Christmas show. She did actually 4 of her regular hits, and she had a DJ beforehand, and he was playing all the songs that she was not going to sing, but 90% of that show was Christmas songs.
Wow.
And it was fantastic.
Wow.
And you hear all those stories, she's a diva, she's a bitch, she's all these things. She did 15 minutes of crowd work. She went through, while singing, what's the song, Always Be My Baby, she went through the crowd and signed stuff and took selfies and was very magnanimous with her talents. So she was not diva-y at all. Maybe, you know, she thinks that she has that reputation, so she should do that.
Are you sure that wasn't a body double that was going through?
No, because every once in a while you hear her say, don't touch the hair.
I got a couple of milestones for that song. Apparently, it became the first holiday song to surpass 2 billion Spotify streams. That just happened on December 13th.
Wow.
It is 10 million now, or 10 million in sales, so it's been diamond certified. On December 17th, it tied Lil Nas X's Old Town Road for most weeks, which is 20, atop the Billboard streaming songs chart. And in 2023, it was inducted into the National Recording Registry with the Library of Congress.
Wow.
And it is not on her number ones CD.
Could you imagine cutting one song and you get $3 million a year for it? For the rest of your life.
That's what I want.
But she also has a lot of other songs.
Granted, but if you had one song and you make $3 million, that's pretty good. You know, like what other songs are doing that for somebody?
Oh, I'm sure there's a few.
Yeah. If you are ever wondering how much it would cost if you bought all the gifts from the 12 Days of Christmas, well...
Whoa.
What?
We're going to have a guest on.
Are they talking about that?
At 8:35, who is going to tell you that. Bill Dendy going to talk about that. But this is a good tease for it, Ethan.
There you go.
If you want to know,
it's coming up.
8:35 today.
I've literally been sitting on that for about 2 weeks. that's fine. Zillow is bringing holiday cheer with virtual tours of Santa Claus's house at the North Pole. If you want to check that out, just head on over to Zillow. The festive cabin is listed at $1.2 million, as seen with 2% increase in price since last year. Visitors can explore features like Santa's bedroom, a hot chocolate bar, a gift wrapping room, and a mailroom loft, all decorated with twinkling lights and garland. The 2,000-square-foot cabin includes fireplaces, a spacious chimney for the elves, a frosted windows, and sleigh parking. So, again, if you want to see it, just go over to Zillow's website and click on Take a Virtual Tour.
Wait, a spacious chimney for the elves?
Yeah, just what it said. I thought that too,
if
Ryan.
If you saw the movie Gremlins, that's a bad idea.
Do you put the elves in a fireplace?
That's the way it said it. I didn't think it either.
How much we think of those poor elves. We're going to stuff you in there.
I also heard about you could Airbnb. Do you have the Christmas Story Airbnb story?
No.
You can rent out the home in Indiana where A Christmas Story was filmed for $2,500 on Christmas Eve.
Oh, okay. And that's actually less than I thought.
For an extra $10, you get the bunny suit.
Do you get to keep
Why
it?
Why not spring for it?
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like NORAD has been delighting children for nearly 70 years by tracking Santa Claus on Christmas Eve.
Oh, I see it right now.
It's a tradition that began by accident in 1955. A Sears ad had misprinted Santa's phone number, which instead rang the Continental Air Defense Command, or CONAD, Operations Center. And the quick-thinking director assured a child caller that he was Santa, sparking the holiday tradition. So if you ever wondered how that came about, there you go.
I believe he's in Australia right now.
Nice. He's on his way.
I guess it would be close to the nighttime for Australia. Yeah.
And if you plan on having a little drink over the holidays, and yes, hangovers are usually coming along with that, there is a UK doctor. His name is Zoe Williams, and his suggestion for the hangover cure,
yes,
is a breakfast sandwich. And you need whole meal, half white bread, bacon, egg, and avocado. Now, that's what's going to cure you, apparently.
So Boxing Day for you, Ryan Recker.
I would say don't get drunk Christmas Eve and then wake up and like have to do the whole family thing.
Yeah,
do yourself
that
a favor.
Sucks.
Yeah. If you're like, oh, Santa, I got to get some of those cookies, make up for this hangover. Don't do it for the kids' sake. There's Dan
it's for your sake. It's
Christmas
not for
Eve.
The kids' sake. It's for your sake.
Thank you, Ethan. I'm Ryan Ricker, filling in on 97.1. FM Talk. Don't go anywhere.
Get more at 971talk.com.